So reinforcement learning models, you can look at the prediction error or how much you expected something and something different happened. So let's say that Ryan owes me $10 and all of a sudden I arrive and he gives me $20. This is a positive prediction error. But let's say that he owes me $10 and I arrive and he gives me only $5. And this is a negative five prediction error. So I have done a lot of work with both modeling, neuroscience, and behavioral work showing how having a prediction error sort of influences, first of all, what you would replay later on and how you would update your memory of a particular situation. Emotionally neutral events usually are events that are not accompanied with any prediction errors. You expected a certain thing and that's what happened. Or you didn't expect too much excitement. It could be that, you know, even happy events, you expect it to be happy, but you're really happy. That could be an emotionally salient event too. But especially events that were associated with strong prediction errors, very huge changes. For instance, you know, a war or a surprise birthday party, or suddenly finding out that you got a new job, or suddenly finding out that you're being laid off because your company can't afford to sort of sustain a particular number of people because of the economic crisis, etc. What happens is that you will store the memories in a different way and in a prioritized way. And one of the things that I do is building models of PTSD in my ongoing work. And what happens in, for instance, in post-traumatic stress disorder is that people seem to not be able to give a very coherent narrative of all of the things that happened, but they replay a lot, or they see these flashbacks of the events that were preceding the traumatic event, but not after. Like the triggers are triggers to just before the bad thing happened. So it's predictive in nature, as I was mentioning earlier. So a lot of my work is about predictive representations in memory. And it seems like the triggers bring you to this state of constantly predicting that, oh, this is what happened before that bad thing happened. So in a way, we know already from a lot of individual experiments in computational modeling, in like behavior experiments and reinforcement learning, in PTSD and clinical research, that emotionally salient events, they are coded differently. And it would make also sense that the same way that my brain prioritizes replaying information that have been associated with or tagged with prediction errors, whether positive or negative, also my conversations to other people would be tagged with events that carried a prediction error. And therefore, in networks of people, when some aspects of a particular story carried some emotional content, but just to use a more sort of like computationally feasible term, a prediction error, like everything was going okay, and all of a sudden one of the boys cuts his hand in the kitchen, maybe then I will remember what was in the kitchen a little more. Or everything was going, all of a sudden Jack found a large amount of money on some shelf. So all those moments, they modulate our memory. And there is a lot of beautiful work on the influence of different neurotransmitters in the brain. For instance, the interaction between dopamine and norepinephrine, on, for instance, how these memories will get encoded differently when there are prediction errors. A lot of nice research also at Princeton on that. So I think that we have good reasons, both in terms of the neuroscience of it and in terms of social psychology of it, both in terms of one person's replay and in terms of social replay, which is just basically talking to each other about what happened, that emotionally salient events would create different modes of community-wide and network-based convergence. And, one thing that I can say is that one very interesting idea that Stacy Sinclair, who's a professor here at Princeton, a psychology professor, had, was that we could look at the reactions that, for instance, Black Twitter shows after some teenager is shot. And it's possible because, you know, it's very easy to sort of sweep all the information from very large networks on Twitter and see what happens. And to analyze, for instance, those and see what are the kinds of events and conversations that all of a sudden people start to talk about for a while. Plus, she's very much interested in how this influences people's health. So you could see, for instance, are they on average tweeting later than they used to? Because when you're distressed, you have sleep disturbances, or you have their location, and you can see in supermarkets, for instance, in predominantly statistically more Black neighborhoods, are the sort of the sales of junk food increasing, for instance. So that she had like very interesting ways that it might be possible for us to sort of marry these two aspects, the emotionally very salient event and look at its effect on different communities, one that is really affected by it and another one that is living in the same sort of city but is not as much affected by it, and look at its effect on what they are rehearsing in, or they're sort of retrieving and talking to each other on social media, as well as how it's influencing their timing of their messages and their sort of health patterns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this sort of ties into a point that we were making way earlier in our conversation, where we were sort of discussing sort of the influence that certain members within a social network, certain node members within a social network can have on people's memories, basically. I think you can imagine in the case of someone getting shot, there are sort of two different vantage points you could be looking at it from. You could be looking at it from the vantage point of the police officer and thinking about how this police officer is taking action to protect oneself. And that's usually how people on one side of an opinion about these types of events are thinking about it. Or you can think about it in terms of the harm caused towards the victim of the shooting, right? And so if you frame those types of events in a more emotionally salient way, either honestly on either side, right, you can frame it in terms of invoking the fear that the police officer may or may not have felt when they took their action, or you could frame it in terms of the pain that this individual who was killed or their family experienced. That influences sort of how you perceive that type of event. And so emotions sort of play a huge role in sort of how we end up conceptualizing these events that could be thought of as objective, right? Like these killings, these murders, et cetera, which is just to say that they are super powerful in terms of shaping things that can be remembered.